Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our play-by-play call of the day. The Mets bullpen is bad.
Here's the set. 3-2 to Suzuki. Swung on. In deep to left field. Way back.
The Mets bullpen, unbelievable. Mickey Callaway's doing a terrible job. No, he has bad personnel. Like, it goes back to that story Andy Russell told us. Chuck Knoll sat the team in the room. He just took over as head coach, and he looked at the group, and he says, "I've looked at all the film. I know why you're not winning." And Andy said, "I know, I perked up." He says, "Finally, we're going to get some answers here." Looked around the room and said, "You guys aren't very good." All right, so, and with that, we bring in Bob Flounders, who was at the press conference yesterday. Hello, Bob, how have you been?
Steve, I'm good. It's funny, you put that Mets highlight up, and I was listening to it, and it's like, it's the 50-year anniversary of the 69 Mets, and they pulled a 180.
They have. They've gone from Tom Seaver, Gary Gentry, Jerry Kuzman, and Nolan Ryan to this. All right. I always refer to the Monday after the opener, or in this case, the Tuesday after the opener, as loss of perspective Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Because suddenly Jalen Hurts is the Heisman Trophy winner. Nobody can beat Alabama or Clemson. You know, everybody jumps to conclusions. So
right off
of that opening game, what were some things that you saw that you think are really good building blocks for this team moving forward?
Yeah, so, I mean, 79-7 speaks for itself. And if you kind of watched Idaho warm up and you saw their size, you knew that it was probably not going to take Penn State very long to kind of take control of the game, and that's how it played out. But just the one thing when you watch Penn State play in that first game, a couple things stood out to me. There's no denying, and this is Franklin's sixth year, I don't think there's any denying that this is his most physically imposing team. It's also his fastest team. And Steve, this is, I told a couple people after the game, yeah, obviously the game was one-sided, but watching Penn State play, I'm not talking about Etor Gross Matos, who's obviously one of the best players in the country, and I'm not talking about, you know, some Micah Parsons, but they're best players. If you took some of the numbers off the jerseys, I think most people would have had a tough time from a talent perspective separating the second team from the first team, which is a long way of saying, Steve, that the depth is so much more significant this year, even extending to the third team with some of those true freshmen, that I don't think it was necessarily a reflection of how bad Idaho was. I think this team was going to be a handful for a lot of teams if they had played them on the opening weekend.
Right. Sean Clifford admitted to Jack and me in the post game that, hey, look, the first two series, he said I was nervous. And then the third one settled him down. When he settled down, and now you get to watch at least a quarter and a half, a little bit more than two quarters of him, what did you think?
I kind of had the feeling early in spring that Sean was ready to be a starter at this level of football in the Big Ten Conference for a team like Penn State. Obviously, you can't do anything about the fact that Tommy decided to move on and go to Mississippi State, but I think that it would have really, really been a heck of a competition in August. It already was between him and Will Levis, but I think Sean had developed and filled out physically and matured and just gotten better at a lot of things, and he had gotten to the point, and he'd gotten some experience last year. He had gotten to the point where he's ready. He was ready to play. And I actually thought, you know, there's been a lot of Penn State starting quarterback debuts to where it's taken a really good quarterback quite a bit of time to settle down. Trace needed a little time to settle down. I think he opened against Kent State in 2016. And Steve, you remember, Michael Robinson, his last year at Penn State in 2005, he was a veteran by then, but those first couple of games, you know, it took him a little while to get going, and there were some people that weren't sure about him. I thought that Sean actually settled down pretty quickly. Impressed with the arm talent. You know, the ball comes out quick. I think he throws a nice spiral, and just the balance and the weapons that Penn State kind of has, it's really hard to try and gang up on one guy. You know, you can try and take K.J. Hamler away, but if Justin Shorter is going to be healthy and do some of the things he did after the catch early in that game, or if they're going to throw those backs, or if your number four tailback is capable of doing what he did, going 80 yards for a touchdown, we didn't really get to see much from Pat Freiermuth. It just seems like, you know, if Sean's got some time, I think he's going to be a very accurate thrower of the football. And the one thing they just need to get a little bit better at, and I think it was probably a little bit overblown, they weren't that great on third down, but they still scored 80 points.
Yeah, they were 1 of 8 on third down. Yet the other part is they also had 492 yards on first down in the game.
It's like, who needs third down?
Right. I mean, they had 492 yards on first down. You mentioned the 81-yard run by Devin Ford. And kudos to him. He made a heck of a play. In the middle of that run, though, Justin Shorter came down. And you and I have both seen, the NCAA has sent me 3 videos on blindside blocks.
Right.
So to make sure we're all prepared for this. And he gets out in front and shields the guy. I thought for a guy really seeing his first extended time, I thought that was just a really smart play. What did you think?
Yeah, his awareness of the situation and what needs to be done in the moment. You know, usually I think a person in that position is just so excited to hit somebody that they can't really help themselves. But he was composed enough with the crowd roaring to do the opposite. You know, he just used his body to basically box out that defender, which is the right thing to do. And I think that speaks to maybe his awareness on the field to go with that physical talent. I just think that this is a player that, you know, they haven't really had a big receiver on the outside that could do some damage, really, I think, since Chris Godwin. So I know it's only been one game, and I know it was an FCS school, but yeah. I think you saw in the first half of that game, Steve, why a lot of people thought in his class, he was probably the top wide receiver recruit available.
All right, so now they make a step up. You know, it doesn't take much to say that. What will you look for in this particular game based on the fact that it's a step up and also Buffalo's style of play?
Yeah, so obviously if you're Buffalo, I mean, they lost the quarterback, obviously, and they were a very good team last year. But one thing I think they're going to be able to do in the MAC and against most of the teams they play is they're probably going to be able to run the ball. They have a really experienced offensive line. They have a lot of guys that have made, you know, 15, 20, 25 starts, and they have a decent running back in the guy that was the MAC freshman of the year. So if you're Buffalo, and throw in the fact they're also got a freshman quarterback, you're going to try and run the ball. You're going to try and make some convert some third and shorts. You're going to try and tire the defense, Penn State's defense out. You know, work the clock a little bit, shorten the game. I think that's probably what would be the game plan for them, not turn the ball over. So I just want to see the Penn State front seven, especially how they kind of manage that offensive line and whether or not they can get some three and outs early in that game so that Penn State's offense can play with a lead and that you want to force Buffalo to get uncomfortable and have to throw the ball. So I think that's what I'd like to see. We really didn't see Cam Brown in the opener because he didn't play in the first half and he made a token appearance, I think, in the second half. Didn't see Damian Barber, did not see Donovan Johnson at corner, who's, you know, I think one of their better corners. So they actually should be deeper on defense for this game. So that's kind of what I'd like to see. I think that all year, Steve, I think those running backs, I believe James when he says they're going to ride the hot hand in the second half because I don't think there's a big separation between one and four. So they really are built, I think, and equipped to kind of wear people out, whether it's on offense, whether it's on defense. You know, I think they really are. But I think Buffalo is unique, and I think Penn State knows what's coming, and they're just going to have to deal with a pretty good offensive line. So Penn State's defensive tackles will kind of get a nice little test, I believe. And we'll just see, you know, they did struggle at times to stop the run in some games. Now, they were better teams that ran the ball on them, but still, I think stopping the run was a point of emphasis in the offseason. So I think this is, in a lot of ways, a nice little test, especially with Pitt coming in week three. And you know what I think they're going to try and do.
Right. No, exactly. When you look at the Penn State's team speed, and I think you alluded to this in your initial answer, Bob, I don't know if there's any point you were down in the field or you just took everything in the press box before going down to the media room. What kind of gauge did you get on overall team speed for Penn State?
Yeah, so I wasn't on the field for the game, but just watching them in practice, I thought one of the most interesting things about the offseason, Steve, was when we got a chance, you got to see more practice, obviously, than a bunch of the media guys. Whenever we were up there and Penn State was working on situations where the offense didn't have the whole field available to itself, whether they were trying to execute in the red zone or they were trying to go, whenever that came up, it really looked to me like Penn State's offense just struggled to gain an inch at times against, you know, the first team and even the second team defense because they were that fast, they were that quick. The defensive end rotation was that deep. And I think that towards the end of August, I think the offense started to get better because they were facing a defense, I think, that maybe outside of Michigan State this year, they're not going to see personnel like they saw in August and even in spring. So I really think the quickness that you see on the Penn State defense is to the point where the teams that they're going to face aren't going to be ready for it, but now Penn State's offense, I think, can function at a very high level because they're not going to see anything quite like they saw for the last 6 months of the offseason. But I don't think there's any question. I've been covering the team since 2002, and I know that you know the 2005 defense was really quick. I mean, they had speed at every level with the linebackers, the secondary. They had guys playing the NFL in the secondary. They had Tamba Ali. They had Jay Alford inside with Paxson. I mean, that was a quick defense. But I think this defense might even be a little bit quicker than that defense, and I think this defense is deeper.
Nationally, what's your biggest takeaway nationally?
I just think people read too much into the first game of the season.
That's why I call it overreaction
Tuesday.
Nothing
really surprises me in week one. I don't know that there were a lot of really marquee games in week one, but I would just take some of the results that happened, especially in the Big Ten, with a grain of salt. I still think the Big Ten West is pretty good, and I know that, you know, Northwestern always struggles early. I don't quite understand that. Even Nebraska, they all kind of, it just didn't look like they were really completely had tightened the screws at the start of the season. I think that the second and third weeks will be much more revealing. I just thought that the first week was about, you know, kind of getting your feet wet, getting the nerves out like Sean Clifford did early in the game. I think that you're going to see the good teams take a big step forward in week two and week three.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Northwestern, because Northwestern last year did not win a single non-conference game.
Yeah, right.
I mean, didn't win any. Bob, thanks so much. Always a pleasure. Appreciate it very much.
Okay, take care, Steve.
Bob Flounders, BenLive.com, Patriot News. Final half hour, Paul Peck, the play-by-play voice of Buffalo. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Paul Peck, the play-by-play voice of Buffalo, coming up in the next half hour. Looking forward to that. Paul does a great job. Really good. So we're looking forward to talking with him about Buffalo. You know, Buffalo's in an interesting spot. And this has happened a lot in college basketball. Take, for example, Penn State when they played in the NIT last year. They ended up playing against Marquette. And Marquette had a fine guard shooter, Andrew Rousey. Rousey was a 1,000-point scorer at Wilmington. 1,000-point scorer. After 2 years, he transferred to Marquette. Well, here's the bottom line on stuff like that. The bottom line is that you have Power 5 schools, and Marquette's a Big East school. You have Power 5 schools for example, poaching smaller schools for their talent. I mean, that's what I find to be very interesting. And the same thing's now happening at this level. And it's happening at this level because look at Buffalo. Buffalo lost 5 guys. Buffalo lost 5 guys to transfer. The way it is, I mean, and what happens is there's so many guys that are being recruited earlier. All the time. Being recruited earlier all the time. You got a lot of great athletes out there being recruited. And sometimes it's the, quote, the football player that falls through the cracks and ends up at a Buffalo, ends up at a Toledo, ends up at a Colorado State. And then after 2 years there, they show what they can do, and everybody's like, yo, okay. And now, and so suddenly they get to be pretty good, and it being pretty good, and showing that they are a football player, okay. Now it takes on a different feel. So sometimes it's the football player or, quote, the basketball player that falls through the cracks. And you have, again, people are poaching. And we have a perfect example right in our own backyard. You don't think they wouldn't love to have Nate Sestina back playing basketball this year at Bucknell? Yet, he is going to go out and he's going to play for Kentucky. You're seeing this more and more and more. where some of these smaller schools have done a great job of identifying talent. Great job identifying talent. And because they have to, I mean, they have to work hard and dig hard to find it. It's very interesting. They develop the talent, the bigger schools then end up poaching it. It's been a problem. How do you solve it? No clue.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have our high school roundtable today that was unfortunately hijacked by IndyCar Talk. The disappointment in the voice was obvious. And I'll try not to sound that disappointed when the topic's brought up again. All right, so...
and hopefully you won't sound disappointed during the Shikellamy-Loyal Sox game on Friday night. Hopefully by then he'll have it out of his system.
I'll tell you right now, I think he's emotionally affected.
Yeah.
Now, the good thing is that hasn't affected sales. Okay.
Well, it's early. It's early in the month. We're good.
You can draw your own conclusions.
That's right. You can look at it more than one way. Right. Pick a side.
All right. A guy that does an outstanding job. I mean, an outstanding job. He really is good. Paul Peck, the play-by-play voice of Buffalo. Paul, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us. Hope you've been well.
I'm doing great, Steve. Thank you for the compliment coming from you. That means an awful lot, so thank you very much.
Well, let's talk about this team. I think Lance has done just a terrific job with this program, but it's also, because it's a MAC program, means that you will be occasionally, excuse the word, poached. It's the college basketball model. You see that all the time with Buffalo basketball. How tough has it been, program-wise, to build something but then have parts taken away?
Well, this year has been the most challenging of the years, and not only because of the poaching. You know, I mean, the Bulls had their first ever player enter the NFL draft early, and that was quarterback Tyree Jackson. So, you know, all of a sudden thinking that he was coming back as the reigning MAC player of the year on offense, coming back, and he makes the decision to choose to go to the NFL. So that sort of got the ball rolling, and then I think reacting to that then prompted who would have been the Bulls' best receiver this year, KJ Osborne, to transfer to Miami, where he's a captain and a starter for the Hurricanes. And that probably prompted his best buddy and former high school teammate, All-MAC Tyler Mabry, to decide to go to Maryland. So you sent your quarterback goes out early. You sent four other players to NFL training camps this year, and two of your best weapons on offense transferred to Power 5 schools. That's the curse of being a really good MAC team and recruiting really well, because that's not the norm at the MAC level to have that many guys be desirable either by Power 5 schools. So that's a tribute to what Lance and the staff have done on the recruiting front. So, yeah, it's been a bigger year of transition than a lot of us thought it would be. You know, I mean, there are times when you drift back to the moment to say, boy, what would this game look like if Tyree Jackson, KJ Osborne, and a couple of the other guys are playing for the Bulls? You might say, boy, there's an upset, a better upset potential on this one.
No question. And they almost lost Jared Patterson too, correct?
No, not that I'm aware of. Okay. I mean, he and his brother are sort of a tandem there.
Well, the twins are the leaders, right?
They are. How about sophomore captains? Among the five captains, two sophomores. That's pretty amazing. And they're great kids, and their backstory is amazing, that James, the linebacker, was being recruited by much higher-level schools than Jarrett, the running back, was. But James said, no, we're going together. And I jokingly asked James during an interview last year, I said, well, what happened if Alabama called and wanted you? And he kind of smiled and chuckled, and he said, well, I would have had to say sorry, Mr. Saban. You know, I mean, it was a cool moment, but it gave you an idea of what this incredible story of the brothers, the twins, deciding to stay together. And not only do they stay together, but they gray shirt a half a year in order to remain timed outright because the Bulls did not have an available scholarship for a running back last fall, only for a linebacker. So it's a really cool story. Then they both emerge as incredible players, all conference level players, and really two of the more influential leaders on the team.
Let's talk about the style of this offense, because obviously Myers has had to run it and went through one game with it. But between Patterson and Marks, are they different style running backs, Paul, that bring a little something different to the table?
Yeah, no question, Steve. Jarrett is you know, 5'7"-ish or so, you know, a little more of a jitterbug kind of a running back who actually will run through some tackles. Marks is a little taller and a little longer and a little more of a speed guy, and a lot of his big plays were outside runs last year. So they're a nice complement for the two of them, you know, and Kevin Marks had kind of taken over early in the year, and then he gets hurt, and then it opened the door for Jarrett Patterson. And, you know, between the two of them, almost 2,000 yards rushing. And if Jarrett Patterson had won MAC Offensive or Rookie of the Year, it might have been Marks. So not only are they a nice combination of running backs with different styles, but you know, they're both really good kids and both really emerging players. I wish I could tell you what the offense is going to look like this year with so many new parts and really not a very applicable test from their opener. We're all kind of wondering. You know, they don't bring much back at the receiver position. Right. The tight end who caught the two touchdown passes in their opener is probably their best pass catcher. I don't want to use the word receiver, but, you know, he'll probably be really their number one target in the passing game. What Myers brings to the table is sort of what a classic current day college quarterback is, which is, you know, a big arm, but the ability to run, the ability to run the read option, which is always what Lance Leipold had as his quarterbacks, and when he was winning all those Division III championships, was that type of quarterback. And then he kind of inherits Tyree Jackson here and then kind of runs the course of Tyree. So for a lot of us, we think this is really the ultimate quarterback that Lance likes to have, just kind of a matter of seeing how the kid develops.
All right. Defensively, the two bookend defensive ends plus Khalil Mack's younger brothers there as well. Is this the kind of group that can put pressure on a quarterback because of the edge rushers?
Yeah, I think so. Between the two of them, Kuntz and Riggins, who were backups last year, they combined for 8 sacks last year.
Right.
So they're really good pass rushers. Mack has been one of the most talked about players in the preseason, and not because of who his brother is, just because of his incredible improvement and sort of dedication. Last year was only his first year playing defensive end after being a linebacker. They used him on pass rush situations, and he's really developed his game, and maybe that has to do with the fact that he could pick up the phone and call the world's greatest pass rusher and ask him for advice. Maybe that helped a little bit too, but he's been great. Coaches have been raving about him. Had a sack in the game on Thursday. Really one of the They consider him a co-starter. He's one of their captains, so it's going to be interesting to see how he develops. One of the assistant coaches, the defensive ends coach, said to me, he said, other than being 4 inches shorter, he's exactly the same as his brother, and that opened my eyes a little bit.
Yeah, I imagine it would. Now, we talked about Jarrett. What does make James Patterson a really good linebacker?
just tough and smart and athletic enough, you know, not crazy athletic, but athletic enough to be around the ball a lot, second on the team in tackle. From the very beginning of spring practice, which was the first time last year that we saw him, he was in the starting lineup and never left. You just knew he was just one of those football players. And, you know, and he did that last year. Now, he had Khalil Hodge, who was one of the nation's leading tacklers at the middle spot last year, so he had the ability to maybe freelance a little bit more. But he's just always around the ball and always sort of in the right place and usually always makes the play. So, you know, they may use him a little bit in the middle. They'll use him in the outside. We've seen both of those things from the first game and through practices. But he's just a rare, and those are the kind of guys you love to have, particularly at that position.
How much did you learn out of the opener? I mean, look, Penn State's expected to run Idaho out, does. Buffalo's expected to run Robert Morris out, does. So what do you know about your team?
You know, not a ton. I think going into it, we knew they had a really good offensive line and a really good running game, and we saw that. We knew they were incredibly inexperienced at wide receiver, and they only had one. We saw that. We saw a quarterback. Now, remember, Matt Myers is a local guy here, so everybody kind of knows about it. Matter of fact, here's your cool stat. We don't play high school football here as well as you guys do in Pennsylvania, but there's only been three local high school quarterbacks that ever had a 2,000-yard passing and 1,000-yard rushing season. One of them's Chad Kelly, Jim Kelly's nephew, who's in the NFL.
Right.
Another is another local kid who's a really good player at a top 25 Division III school, and Matt Myers. So he led his team to a state championship in a 14-0 season. So we kind of knew what he was, and at least for me, I wanted to just see glimpses of that talent in the game on Thursday, and we did. He only threw 10 times, but he ran, you know, a 33-yard run and had a 40-yard pass and scored a touchdown and threw a couple, you know. So we saw glimpses of talent, and I think we knew, and that was confirmed a little bit in the game on Thursday, that the defense is really aggressive and has a really good pass rush. They gave up a couple big plays. Tackling wasn't great, but that happens sometimes. So that's a little bit of what we learned. And you know, even for us at our level, I think I look at it and go, well, you open up against not a very good FCS team. Now you're playing one of the best Power 5 teams. Sort of with you, I won't know who this Bulls team is really until next week's game against Liberty, which is a little more of an even comparison.
Right, especially if the coach works on the sideline.
True.
Which will help out. Obviously, I've sat down, I've watched Buffalo tape, some of it from last year. Obviously, I watched the Robert Morris thing as well. When you looked at Penn State, what did you think? I mean, I know it's one game and I know it's Idaho, but what did you think?
Two things jumped out at me, Steve, because remember, this is the first time we're playing you guys since 2015.
Right.
Incredibly more athletic and deeper than the team was in 2015, even though you had Barkley on that. Well, that's what you remember from the 2015 team. That was Barkley's first 100-yard game,
yeah.
And you're like, whoa, who's this guy?
That was also the hurdle game, too, the first
time
he hurdled
somebody. That's the play we all talk about, that leap over the safety. But obviously, Penn State's so much more athletic and so much bigger, and even Lance Leipold pointed that out there. They're just long and bigger at every position. So that's kind of what I remember, you know, about that game back then. More weapons, you know. I mean, I think from when I watched the Penn State game, I think it looks like your defense is really, really good, and Gross Matos is going to be a really fun guy to watch. I already talked to some scouts that were in scouting Buffalo, and they're like, that guy's a stud. One of the scouts told me half the guys in the NFL can't block him now. So you know that. And the running backs, and Hamler's a great player. I mean, quarterback, I think you'd say you don't necessarily know exactly what Clifford is. He did a lot of good things, but who'd he do it against?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Paul, a pleasure. Really looking forward to seeing with you and talking with you on Saturday night. It'll be great to have you back.
You got it. I look forward to it as well, too. Thanks, Steve.
Paul Peck, who does an outstanding job as the play-by-play voice at Buffalo. Now, is Bucknell home this weekend?
Saturday night, they are on the road. They will be at Sacred Heart.
Okay, he's going to go to Connecticut. All right. Well, this will be great. I mean, you and I could put together an all-day tailgate.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
Bucknell airtime will be 5:30 on Eagle 107 on Saturday, 6 o'clock kick.
But you and I can do an all day tailgate leading up to the game. Yeah, we can spend time with Corey, Tom, right? Steve Engel, you know, and we'll have people who want to talk football, like-minded people.
Yes.
As opposed to somebody coming in and going, can you believe they dumped the Pocono race? Okay, at that point, all the air out of the party balloon is gone.
So, at that point, you're looking for the cornhole beanbags and just looking to get a game going.
I mean, yep, I'll play. Anybody with anybody to play cornhole? Yep. Good. Yeah, and sure, let's have a tournament. I can't believe what they did. Right, it's a trioval. Okay, we're over here, right? 300 yards
and a cloud of dust.
Yeah, we do 100 yards. You know, that's what we do. 10-yard end zones. We're not worried about your 300-yard straightaway. Come on, I'm distraught. And hearing you talk about it makes us distraught. We'll come back with more in a moment. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, great to have you with us. As we wind down today, we've had a lot of fun today. I'll tell you, Wetzel, every time I turn around, the golf report gets better and better. He's going to have to go to Q school.
Yeah.
My goodness. He's got two birdies. Then the other guy comes on. He's whining about some car race, and like, you know, Greg and I are all confused. We thought it was a football segment.
That was the plan.
That we'd be confused.
Well, football. So that was to be a true, just football segment.
Yeah. What was that about? I didn't even have the race on my calendar. My favorite was when he brought up the Portland race, and all of us looked at each other and said there was a race in Portland. See, even the emergency broadcast system can't believe it.
I know. This is only a test.
Oh, believe it did test my patience. Tomorrow's the 40th anniversary of the creation of ESPN. For the first 25 years, maybe even close to 30 years, I thought, wow, you know, like, I loved it. Boy, suddenly you're watching games, they're taking you to places you've never been to before. Man, the last 10 years, have they ever lost their way? I can't watch so many things they do. I can't watch now. I can only watch games. Now, I completely understand. Please, understand this. I completely understand shows like First Take with Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman, Get Up, Around the Horn, PTI. I understand all that stuff. That's fine. There's nothing going on during the day. So they're trying to produce original programming, draw some viewers. So I'm fine. I get that. But when they get to their game coverage, which is the area they're supposed to excel in, and their pregame shows are on forever and ever. I mean, game day at 3 hours. When they went to 3 hours, they really started losing me. It was too long. They don't stay focused. And it's just not, it stopped being enjoyable to watch. And I was faithful every week watching that show. And then finally, they just eventually lost me. Like, you know what? I've had enough. I know people think I need to sit there and listen to it so I know what they're thinking, but it does get to a point where you don't care what they're thinking.
I had appointment viewing. I'd always like to watch the NFL matchup show with Sal Palantonio, and especially when it was Ron Jaworski and Merrill Hodge on the show. But it just seemed like they would bury that show at the weirdest times. I mean, they'd put it on ESPN2 at, like, what, 4:30 or 5 in the morning? And it's like, why can't you just put it on at a very nice, convenient time, a little later on Sunday morning, especially for the football fan that loves both college and pro. They, you know, if they're up late Saturday night watching a primetime game that maybe runs till midnight, you know, put it on at like right before when the sports reporters used to be on. That was another show I always enjoyed watching, was the sports reporters.
Yeah, and you know, even college basketball game day, what if it's a shorter version? But and I'll watch any game. You know, ESPN is a good game. I'm watching it. But I don't care what the analyst thinks about who they're top four. You have no vote. Move on. Tell me about the game I'm watching. I tuned in specifically to watch this game. I did not tune in for your opinions. Okay, if it was an opinion show, I'd make my choice as to whether to watch it or not. I tuned in for the game.
Another thing, too,
about the game.
I couldn't figure out last year with the NFL Monday night coverage. They would have those little halftime commercial-free mini concert videos where there'd be like perfect product placement in these videos. And I didn't understand that last year.
This is what I'm talking about. For a group that is supposed to be the worldwide leader in sports, Sean, it's like they forgot how to do sports.
They turn it into an event, and just seems like they just overthink it, and they want to create this gymungous production every single week. It's like they want to wow the crowd.
It's a game. It's not a show.
I just wonder if that's the ways that they're trying to come up with younger crowd to watch it, whether it's on their TV or on their phones.
Look, you got to be able to just present what's on there. I think younger people will gravitate towards sports just for the enjoyment of watching sports. They don't need to keep trying to reinvent the wheel because they're worried about the thought process of an 18 to 34-year-old. Now, guess what? They get older.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.